Shalom Yehudim, Shalom Abnei Noach, Shalom Goyim. It's the evening of the second day, Dalas B'Menachem Av, Tavshinayin Hey, Parashas Dvorim, the evening of the first day, Sunday, 19 July, 2015, webcasting from Ground Zero of World Aggression. Today the news made it seem as if we really do have to circle the wagons because the Goyim are attacking from all sides. Let's see, Obama disrespected the bill requiring him to give Congress 2 months to study his brilliant deal with Iran. But there he is, and using his errand girl Samantha Power to run to the Security Council right away to affirm the deal right now. And what's really weird and indicative of the rampant anti-Jewitis here is that the Security Council is dominated by the very same countries who made the deal. The P5 plus one means the five permanent members of the Security Council plus Germany, and here's Obama wanting the Council's support for what was decided by the same countries in Vienna. It's just another double whammy on us Jews, I think. In my book, I explain how the UN General Assembly over the years began to write longer and longer resolutions attacking Israel, requiring separate votes on different sections of the resolution. An organization of less than 200 member states in one day could cast hundreds of votes against Israel. A typical resolution might call for several votes, and each one would, 155 yeas and two nays, to 39 abstentions. And you do that five times in a day. Well, on the same resolution, you get over 500 member states turning their thumbs down on the Jews. That's the way it was in the first 45 years. The UN General Assembly cast over 55,000 country votes against Israel. And it's been 26 years since that figure was reached. It must now be around 100,000 country votes at the UN in the 70 years of the United Nations existence. Today as well, at the ICC, the International Criminal Court created by the UN in the late 1990s, has just reopened its investigation into Israel's criminal aggression against the poor, poor Turks and others on board the Mavi Marmara in 2010. And never mind the video evidence that the IDF forces were attacked before they even hit the deck. When Prime Minister Netanyahu agreed to pay compensation to Turkey, I thought that was a huge mistake. Like his Bar-Ilan confession that he too believes that the Palestinians have a right to a state in Judea and Samaria. That was one or two attacks from that flank in the news today, along with the violation by that chronic liar Obama running to the Security Council. And then we learned separately that Federica Mogherini, fresh from Vienna, where she and others decided to give Iran $150 billion, even as Iran publicly threatens the U.S. and the West with annihilation, she tomorrow will convene 28 foreign ministers in Brussels, of the EU, to deal with another pressing issue apart from Iran's nuclear project, and that is the absence of a state for the ancient Palestinian people. Tomorrow in new EU headquarters in Brussels, these unelected bureaucrats will convene to discuss the stalled alleged peace talks between Israel and its victims. The EU feels it is urgent that all of Europe pressure the Jews to hand over land to the ancient ones. And never mind that no group of human beings in our position would do what these enemies demand that we do. They want us to drive hundreds of thousands of Jews from homes they have every right, moral and legal, to live in. They want Israel to retreat from the high ground, come down, from land taken in 1967, and turn it back to the Arabs so they can create a state of Palestine. This is what Mogherini and her enlightened fellow Europeans want to see. And that Israel does not bend to their demands, well, Israel will suffer. We're surrounded on three sides by 550 million, mostly Muslims, whose religion religiously hates us Jews, but we're the bad guys. These Muslims seem to be, in recent years, in one of their periodic blood convulsions. They are always murdering one another. In Gaza, just yesterday or today, six cars belonging to some of them Hamas and some to the rival group Islamic Jihad, were blown up by ISIS. So it's now a three-party struggle for power there, and never mind Fatah, which is on the sidelines there. It's a political contest, but one not conducted, as in civilized societies, via the ballot box. This is Araby, where political factions duke it out in the streets with assault weapons, RPGs, hidden bombs, bombs in each other's mosques. And it is to such people, Federica Mogherini and her fellow enlightened Europeans, all 28 foreign ministers, want us to surrender to. They will gather to order us to do just that, to retreat. Hand over the high ground to the Arabians, these Hamitic, Ishmaelitic, violent people. They got to be kidding. Or they're classical anti-Jews in their insensate inability to empathize with us, to imaginatively see themselves in our shoes. They demand of us what no human beings would ever agree to. And in this fever of anti-Jew cogitation, and not only do these goyim give us a hard time, by their obsession with us, they do immense harm to other people who could use their help. About 6 weeks ago, it was reported that fighting between the infant government of the new state of South Sudan and its rebels has sent 100,000 people fleeing for their lives to join an initial 2 million people who have run in South Sudan since the fighting began 2 years ago. Is anybody at the Human Rights Commission paying attention? Yesterday in Iraq, one side, ISIS I think it was, had a great victory, leastwise as Arabs define victory. It was not a victory on a battlefield. A hidden bomb was placed in a market planted by ISIS in a largely Shiite market town, and it killed 130 people. That was some explosion. And one can imagine that the bomb builder afterwards was the recipient of affectionate slaps on the back from his colleagues for his holy slaughter. Way to go, Ahmed. Cool. 130 dead. What a guy. These are our neighbors, and all the ICC can do, and the UNHRC and the EU, is point the finger of guilt at us and threaten us, the world's only tiny Jewish state, for being violators of human rights. We are the violators of human rights, not Ahmed the bomb maker, and all the bomb makers of Arabi and Islam. Last Thursday, the Prime Minister accused the ICC, International Court, of hypocrisy for singling out Israel again over this Mavi Marra incident of 5 years ago, at the same time that Assad in Syria is dropping barrel bombs and chemical weapons on his own people. I think, though, Bibi's choice of words, hypocrisy, is a cousin of his unfortunate Bar-Ilan speech. Hypocrisy is not quite the right word in this situation, I think. The right word is anti-Semitism. The smearing of Jews with guilt as a diversion or distraction away from the truly guilty elsewhere. Like Mordechai Kedar mentioned last time, I think Bibi is another Israeli who never experienced anti-Semitism in his formative years and does not notice it when he should. Here was just yesterday, Signorina Mogherini, or is it Dottore Mogherini, with a PhD in political science, erstwhile member of the Young Communist League in Italy or something. There she was in Vienna, smiling at the Iranians, giving them billions, and smiling at their eventual A-bomb production as well. Now she has flown on her broomstick back to Brussels to address all foreign ministers in Europe, as together they ponder what to do with us Jews. We stiff-necked crucifiers of the ancient Palestinians for not handing over the land that Israel stole in 1967. I think Bibi is like other Israelis who I have known, and especially in his age cohort, basically mine, who not only did not experience anti-Semitism in their formative years, they were taught as well by the secular culture here. Anti-Semitism was, to a serious degree, the result not only of anti-Semite haters, but Jews themselves, and the way they behaved and the way they acted. Israelis like this aren't comfortable with the thought that the Jews were 100% innocent. They had to have some role in having people hate them. Such was one thread in the skein of Sabra thought in those early years.
Ano, 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 avedo de kudisha berichu. 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 Ano, 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 avedo de kudisha berichu.
Speaking before of our antagonists firing from all sides, in another situation, on Friday, the U.S. State Department warned Israel to do nothing against a relatively recently thrown up, jerry-built, so-called Palestinian village in the South Hebron Hills next to historic Susia, with its historic, restored ancient synagogue, a project overseen by my late friend, Chavam Ze'evi, Hashem Yikom Demo. Israel wants to tear down this so-called Palestinian village, thrown up with no license from any authority, sort of like a settler outpost, only in this situation the State Department wields an entirely opposite policy. The State Department, of course, has wanted for years to see the destruction of illegal settlements, illegal even by Israeli law. The State Department, of course, smiled over the destruction of Gush Katif 10 years ago. At this time, that's okay, but when it comes to Israel tearing down an illegal Arab settlement, a settlement threatening to become permanent, Israel is warned that this will be harmful and provocative. According to coverage in the Jerusalem Post, the EU bureaucracy also has its own representative on the scene there, representing the EU to the PA, one John Gottreuter, and he's not alone. There are 23 other Euro representatives to the PA here, as if the PA were a state and these were ambassadors, all of whom line up behind the EU's point man, Gottreuter, or whatever, to defend the Ancient Ones from having their settlement of like 300 people, now it's Susia, destroyed like Gush Katif. According to EU point man, Gottreuter, Israel, quote, has a duty to facilitate Palestinian development in these areas occupied by it, including Area C, which represents over 60% of the West Bank, close quote. And I say, no, Israel does not have such a duty. We are under no obligation to develop our mortal enemies. What kind of ethical system is this? We don't know the Arabs in Judea and Samaria a damn thing. This land was recognized as the Jewish people's ancient homeland by the League of Nations, which recognition was included in the UN Charter. It was Jordan that was in unsanctioned illegal occupation of Judea and Samaria for 19 years and used it to launch murder raids by Fedayeen to murder our people, sometimes in their beds. In 1967, the Jordanians tried again and failed to take land that we'd brought back to life away from us and kill as many of us as they had to do that. But we pushed them back and took the land away from them. And we under no obligation to return it, and no obligation to make citizens in our state of the Arab non-combatants who did not run away with the Arab Legion in 1967. This Scott Ruter, he's a Maltese, I think, whose native language is like half Arabic, he said, as he looked at the Jewish community a few meters away at Susia, he said, quote, "We can see the settlements which surround this piece of land," referring to the Arab settlement. Quote, "The EU, which you know has a clear position on settlements which are illegal according to international law and threaten the viability of a two-state solution, which the EU has a profound and significant interest in." I find this an excellent specimen of anti-Jew thinking in our time. Here's this EU bureaucrat seeing Arabs surrounded by Jews. And of course, looking at the big picture of the region, it's Arabs who surround us. Notice, too, the use of the two-state solution, which is a euphemism for another round of driving hundreds of thousands of Jews from their homes, as they have been in generation after generation. And notice the lie that these Jewish communities are illegal, when that is demonstrably false. Jewish communities in Judea and Samaria were pronounced legal by the League of Nations mandate. The mandate did provide for the severing of eastern Palestine, the East Bank, and that happened, set aside for Arabs, but otherwise the rest of the mandate was explicitly a mandate to create a Jewish homeland in the Jewish people's ancient homeland. It's all there in black and white. What I find most interesting in this specimen of anti-Jew cogitation by a European anti-Jew was his statement that, quote, "The EU has a profound and significant interest in the two-state solution," close quote, which I find simultaneously both true and false. It's false because Europe has no material interest whatsoever in events here. It's all psychological. There are no natural resources or business at stake. But it's also true that because the Europeans dare not refrain from Jew bashing, because then they will be accused of being our accomplices, and that could mean a return to the bad old 1970s when Europe was pummeled by Arab terror until 1980, when the forerunner of the EU recognized the PLO as a legitimate organization, when it was then and is still no more legitimate than the Mafia. It was then and remains a criminal organization of massacre artists, terrorists who plant bombs in airplanes and blow them out of the sky. Europe was mugged into recognizing the PLO. But on a deeper level, I accept that to Europe, the two-state solution is of profound and significant interest. For Europeans have been obsessed with the Jews from time immemorial. The resurrection of the barren land of Israel by us, we who returned home after 19 centuries of homelessness, of rootlessness, living on sufferance everywhere, in exile, or so Christians said, because we had killed our Messiah. Well, have we been forgiven? I mean, what are we Jews doing back in Eretz Yisrael and making it bloom again? Maybe that explanation was off the mark. Ooh. Consider, too, how Europeans these days are themselves bereft of religion and national identity. The conventional wisdom is that after the horrors of the two world wars, nobody in Europe wants to fight anybody else in Europe anymore. Nationalism is a terrible thing, a generation has been taught. And so the vitality of Jewish national life throws them for a loop. Interesting, too, how Israel's biggest supporters are those Americans most ardent in their patriotism, the flag wavers. Both communities are proud of their national identities, which is another reason why Barack Hussein Obama, who has no national identity, hates both his own country and Israel.
אני מאמין באמונה שלמה
בביאת המשיח אני מאמין. ואף על פי שיתממה עם כל זה אחכה לו בכל יום שיבוא. ואף על פי שיתממה עם כל זה אחכה לו בכל יום שיבוא. אני מאמין באמונה שלמה בביאת המשיח אני מאמין. הוי, ואף על פי שיתממה עם כל זה אחכה לו בכל יום שיבוא. הוי, ואף על פי שיתממה עם כל זה אחכה לו בכל יום שיבוא. ואף על פי שיתממה עם כל זה אחכה לו בכל יום שיבוא. ואף על פי שיתממה עם כל זה אחכה לו בכל יום שיבוא. ואף על פי שיתממה עם כל זה אחכה לו בכל יום שיבוא.
You're listening to www.deprogramprogram.com, broadcasting from the hills of Judea. I'm Shai Ben Tekoa. Last week I was pleased to see and salute the excellent Daniel Greenfield on the Front Page magazine site when he called Obama and Kerry traitors. No pulling punches here. It really is what is necessary to be said following the Vienna abomination, so similar to the Oslo abomination. What we need is one, at least one, courageous congressman or senator to stand up at the podium and speak the unspeakable truth that the President of the United States of America, successor to George Washington, who could not tell a lie, can't stop lying, and his words and explanations notwithstanding, by his behavior, he is in fact a traitor. Likewise, his Secretary of State, John Kerry, successor to the first man in that role, Thomas Jefferson, who ironically was the number one hawk for war with Islam, not appeasement, as Kerry is in this generation. Greenfield gets the gold for being the first to use the word traitors, but that is who Obama and Kerry are, and their staffers no less, like the Jewess Wendy Sherman, the same knucklehead who 20 years ago orchestrated the anti-A-bomb North Korea deal, which literally blew up in 2006 when Pyongyang set off its first nuclear device. Kerry and Obama and Rhodes, a whole lot of them, have talked themselves into forking over $150 billion to a country which the same day was screaming it's going to destroy America. What is going on here? The excellent Ann Bayefsky, last week, she's an expert on the UN these days, checked out the sayings of Obama regarding Iran against the six UN resolutions with all their legalese, and she found, what do you know, both Kerry and Obama are lying. They both have tried to justify their big deal, the reference to these UN resolutions, and both of them have been lying, saying things about them that are not true. It's a kind of madness, real Lewis Carroll stuff. This deal is being made with a country with a record of not keeping deals. So what's going on here? Well, I think, at least for Obama, if not Kerry, was more of a mystery to me. For Obama, he is a Muslim who strives toward a goal and licenses himself to say whatever he wants from moment to moment with zero fidelity to the truth. He says what he says to please his audience in the moment and then pays no attention later on to what he said. He puffed up his chest when it was reported that the Syrians were using chemical weapons and said, "That's a red line," and then did nothing about it. He's always doing that. At the G8 summit, I think it was, he was asked by the press about a U.S. strategy against ISIS. And he said that when the Pentagon provides him with a plan, he will go public with it. And according to some reports in the Pentagon, the brass were blowing fuses since they had already provided this man with a menu of strategies to choose from. He said what he said at the press conference at the moment to dominate the moment, in the knowledge that there would be no follow-up by a journalist claiming the Pentagon had in fact provided him with plans. It's just not done as well in a press conference to get into a confrontation with the president. So Obama confidently answered the question and moved on, and to hell with the truth. Likewise, we learned on Friday from none other than Wendy Sherman that all their boasting of an agreement containing surprise inspections anytime, anyplace was, she said, a rhetorical flourish. What has this nation come to when lying like this is waved off as permissible? This is a people that has lost its moral compass.
Hi-yi. 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 V'taher libeinu לעובדך באמת והנחילנו השם אלוקינו באהבה וברצון שבת קודשך וינוחו בם כל ישראל מקדשי שמך וטהר ליבנו לעובדך באמת והנחילנו השם אלוקינו באהבה וברצון שבת קודשך וינוחו בם כל ישראל מקדשי שמך
last item, it was reported today that the terror cell that shot up a car near Shoot Rachel about 2 weeks ago, which resulted in several amateur basketball players returning from a game being shot in that car. Three were wounded moderately, but one, Malachi Rosenfeld, Hashem Yom Damo, died the next day. Well, that cell was controlled by one of the barbarians released in the exchange for Gilad Shalit. One will be interested tomorrow to hear what Gilad's father, Noam, has to say about this. Okay, that's it for this first night of the week. I'll be back, God willing, on Tuesday. Until then, Laila Tov, Meretz Yisrael.